Good afternoon and welcome back to Our Savior's Radio Online. I'm Pastor Eric Jelinek. It's great to be with you once again. I'm joined once again with Pastor Jennifer. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Well, today we are going to start looking at the exile or the Babylonian captivity. And I have to admit, this is not one of my strength areas. I have not spent a lot of time focusing on this. I've done a little bit, but not much. So I got to do quite a bit of research for today as well. So it's been a lot of fun diving back into some of this stuff. But I think we'll start by turning over to Pastor Jennifer, and she'll do a little bit of an introduction and start moving us through.
Okay, so up until this point, a lot of the things that have happened in the Bible have been pretty easy to follow through the Pentateuch, through the first five books, through the books of the Kings and that sort of thing. Now it gets a little bit more tricky. There are a lot of passages that talk about this period in Israel's history, but they're a little bit harder to find and kind of scattered out, that you find some in this book and some in that book. And and the rest of the Old Testament, much of the rest of the Old Testament, has to do with this period in history, with the prophets and that sort of thing. So the last thing that we really talked about kind of chronologically was the kings. And so we talked about how there were some very good kings and some very bad kings. And even the good kings had their flaws, obviously. As years went on and the kings ruled over Israel and Judah, because remember, now they're split into two separate kingdoms, they are leading their people into idolatry and into making deals with foreign nations and leading them away from the way that God would like them to live. Excuse me. And so God keeps warning them that they need to turn back and they need to live according to the laws that he's given them, the laws that they have covenanted that they would keep. And God sends a number of prophets to both of those nations to encourage them to think about what they're doing, to change their ways, and to live a more righteous life. The time period that we're looking at to begin with is in the 700s, and remember, when you're talking B.C. before Christ, you'd say, or B.C.E. before Christian era, the numbers go backwards, and so we're talking about before Jesus was born, 700 years, or more than 700 years before that. Israel and Judah both have their own nations, but they're not nearly as strong as they had been. There are a number of other nations that they have treaties with or trade agreements with, and those nations are a lot more powerful. And so there are times that they can feel that, say, Egypt is coming to conquer them, or Assyria or Babylon, and so they make deals with them. And at this time, Egypt and Babylon and Assyria were kind of all against one another. Excuse me. And so the Israelites often made deals with Egypt to kind of protect them, and they would keep the buffer so that Assyria and Babylon were not going to come and conquer Egypt as well. And so you see, it's not like they are independent, strong states as they had been before. That is already starting to crumble.
One of the phrases that I had heard used is they were referred to as client states.
Yeah.
It was a way that they were tied in with these different ones. And there were different parts within Israel, or within Judah and Israel, that would lean one way or another. They might lean towards wanting to do more with Assyria, or lean towards wanting to do more with Egypt, depending on which way their leadership at that time was going.
So we're looking primarily at the northern kingdom right now, which is the kingdom of Israel, which, as you may remember, has the bulk of the tribes of Israel. 10 tribes went with the northern kingdom, and just one, Judah, stayed in the south, in the Jerusalem area. And so the northern kingdom kind of fell prey to Assyria much earlier than Judah did. excuse me. So over a number of years, Assyria would come in and try to conquer them, and Israel would fight them off. But that doesn't mean that Assyria didn't make some progress. They would come in and conquer a couple of cities, and when they did that, they would destroy those cities, take all of the wealth that was left, and they would literally carry off those who survived to live in Assyria. So they would not just conquer the land, but they would take the citizens away so they could no longer live there anymore. And this happened over the course of about 20 years, a number of times that they would come and conquer some of the cities, and then they'd take the people away. And the final battle, the final destruction of the northern kingdom came in the year 722. And when they did that, they also conquered a couple of several cities in the southern kingdom, and so it had kind of started down there as well. And so at this point, almost everybody who had lived in Israel is taken away. And so Israel is emptied out, and it says that only the poorest people were left to live there to take care of the land. And so this promised land that they had worked for so long suddenly is no longer theirs, and no longer are they in control of it, but also no longer are they even allowed to be there. They've been taken away to Assyria.
Then we move down and we start talking a little bit more about the... did you want to talk about one of the kings before this, or did you want to move down into the southern kingdom at this point?
No, that's all right. You can move on. I just wanted to also say that the capital city of the northern kingdom was Samaria, which plays in a lot in the... In the New Testament, we learn about Samaria and the Samaritans. So that's just an interesting little trivia point that the capital city, Samaria, was conquered when the northern kingdom was taken.
When we start looking down into the southern kingdom, then down into Judah, it was during the time when King Nebuchadnezzar II was ruling over Babylon. And we'll probably move, I don't know, about 100 years or so down to right around 600 or 599, around that time. And again, like we had talked about, this was a client state, and so they had ties with different communities, different countries as well. And now they were really having closer ties with Egypt, down in the south especially. And so Judah decided around this time that they were going to revolt against Babylon, because they had had ties with Babylon as well. And they thought this would be a good time that we try to pull away and have a little bit more independence. And this happened around 599, like I was saying. And so they started to rebel against King Nebuchadnezzar. Well, he didn't really like that too much. And so he sent in a bunch of troops, and they came in and basically laid siege to Jerusalem. Now, during this time, the king was, oh boy, we get into these names again that I always slaughter the pronunciations of. Jehoiakim was the king of Judah. And it was during this time that they were laying siege, which lasted about 3 months, that he was killed. During this time, or he died during this time. We're not exactly clear on the method of how that happened. But then his son took over, Jeconiah. And he was either, depending on which one we look at, he was either 8 or he was 18 at the time when he became king. Well, during this 3 months, they were laying siege, and finally, the Babylonians broke the siege and got into Jerusalem. When they got there, they pretty much destroyed everything. They pillaged Jerusalem, they pillaged the temple, they took the new king and his court, and even the prophet Ezekiel, as well as other leaders, to live in Babylon. And so this was their way of saying, you might try to rebel against us, but don't, because we will come and take your leaders away from you. And so that's what they did. They hauled them away and then basically let them be, with the assumption that they weren't going to be rebelling against Babylon once again. The people then in town that were left in Judah and in Jerusalem, they named Zedekiah as their ruler at the time, and they started to continue on. But this was the first wave of people that were then brought out of Jerusalem into Babylon.
I'm going to take us back a little bit. There's a pretty good king that comes earlier in Judah's history named King Hezekiah, and there's just some funny, interesting stories about King Hezekiah. King Hezekiah made strides to cleanse the temple that had been used for idolatry and that sort of thing, and so God was happy with Hezekiah as a whole, because he did try to be faithful in a lot of ways, and he had some downfalls, as all of the kings did, but he was one of the better kings. I'm looking at 2 Kings chapter 20, which is where a lot of Hezekiah's stuff can be found. It talks about how Hezekiah had been kind of unfaithful to God, and he was dying, basically. And this is during the time of Isaiah, and you can read lots more of Isaiah's ministry in that book. And Isaiah comes to Hezekiah and says, set your things in order because you're going to die in just a few days. And Hezekiah kind of freaks out, as I suppose any of us would if we heard that we're going to die a few days later. And so he goes to Isaiah and says, please talk to God for me. And so Isaiah turns to God and then comes back to Hezekiah and says, all right, I'll give you 15 more years of life, and I'll deliver you and the city out of the hand of the king of Assyria, because this is before Babylon had come in. And, you know, the people in Judah were still very much afraid of Assyria coming and taking them, as they took their family members that were in Israel. And so God says, I'm going to protect you from the king of Assyria, and you're not going to be conquered while you're king. And Hezekiah is just like, kind of like, great, sounds good, good enough for me. He doesn't really think about long-term goals or problems. And later on in the chapter, there's an envoy from Babylon that comes in and has heard that the king is sick. And so they bring him gifts to, you know, encourage him to get well and everything. And Hezekiah knows that he's going to live, and he's proud of his kingdom. And so he goes and he shows everybody around his kingdom. He shows them the temple. He shows them his palace. He shows them all of his riches. And just to kind of brag and show how much they had in Judah. And then later, Isaiah comes to Hezekiah and says, so what'd you just do? And he said, well, I showed him everything that we have. There's not a single thing that I didn't show them. And Isaiah says, a day will come that the Babylonians will be back and they will take everything that you have just shown them. And so it was kind of to show Hezekiah that he was really an idiot. He showed their enemy all of the wealth and all the reasons that they had to come and conquer Judah because they had so much. And, of course, that prophecy came true, as Pastor Eric was just talking about. Over the course of 30 years, there were three waves of Babylonian invasions that came and eventually destroyed Jerusalem, destroyed the temple, took everything they had, and eventually packed up everybody and shipped them out, except for the poorest of the poor, as it talks about.
The second wave came under King Zedekiah. That was about 10 years after the first one. And he once again tried to rebel against King Nebuchadnezzar. And again, it didn't go too well. So this time, when the Babylonians came in, they destroyed the entire city wall as well as the temple. Then they took King Zedekiah and they blinded him and hauled him off to Babylon as well. And at this point, Judah then became one of the Babylonian provinces. And so no longer were they going to have a king. No longer were they going to be viewed as a client state, but they were a province, and they were ruled over by Babylon. And so Babylon then appointed a governor. His name was Gedaliah, and he was actually a native of Judah. And he did really quite well for quite a while. He was a native who started to bring back some of the others who had gone off to other places. And it looked like Judah was doing fairly well at this time. But then other people weren't exactly happy that he was appointed governor. And so around 582 or so, there were a surviving member or two of the royal family, and they thought, you know, we really can't let this guy take over and be the ruler, so they had him assassinated. And so that was pretty much the end of those who were ruling during that time that were the natives of Judah in that country. And then you start to hear more and more of the prophets that were prophesying during this exilic time in Babylon.
So that gets Israel and Judah out of Israel and Judah and kind of back to how things were years and years before. You know, for a big part of their history, there were people wandering in the wilderness looking for the country that had been promised. And so now life in that country has been lived out, and they've now lost it. And they've been sent off to what we know as modern-day Iran and Iraq, where they would be for a number of years. We don't really hear much about what happens to Israel after they are sent into Assyria. But we do hear that some of those who were sent to Babylon from Judah are allowed to come back, but that's something we'll talk more about next week. But it's just a different part in history that they're sent to live in a country that's not their own. It's not slavery necessarily, but they've now lost the way that they have communicated with God and known God through the land, through the temple, and through the prophets who have been with them. So I think next week we'll probably talk a little bit about life in exile and probably about some of them coming back from exile.
Sounds good. Thank you once again for joining us, and we hope you have a blessed day.